Welcome to From Caving In to Crushing It, the podcast for those who find themselves immersed in adversity and choose to write their story instead of having others write it for them. I'm Drew Duraney, and I'm your host.
Today's guest is Lion Goodman. Lion Goodman is the founder and CEO of Clear Beliefs Institute. He has 40 years' experience as an executive coach, teacher, belief therapist, and subconscious pattern detective. He is the creator of the Clear Beliefs Method, a proprietary process for shifting beliefs at the core of the psyche, healing childhood wounds, and resolving trauma. More than 600 coaches, therapists, healers, and change agents around the world have graduated from his Clear Beliefs coach training. Lion is the author of 5 books, including Clear Your Client's Limiting Beliefs, Creating on Purpose, Menlightenment, and the Narcissism Primer. He has taught workshops and trainings across the United States, Canada, Europe, Central America, and China. His articles have been widely published in books, magazines, and blog sites, including Choice Magazine, Coaching Perspectives, Good Men Project, and Your Tango. And he has been featured on more than 100 summits, radio programs, podcasts, and television shows. In his previous incarnation, as a young man, Lion spent 25 years in executive search and executive coaching. He worked with hundreds of companies and executives, helping them build their team and become more successful in their career. Thousands of students and clients have reported profound transformation from his work, allowing them to feel freer, be happier, and achieve their goals faster and easier. Enjoy the show. Hey, Lion, so good to see you, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Drew, it's a pleasure to be here again. You're a great podcast host.
Oh, thank you. You're a wonderful human being, man. And I know we've only met like once. And, it's funny. I have this spreadsheet that I track like how I meet people. And I see that Steve Ramona is the one who introduced us. So I want to thank Steve Ramona for the introduction. Steve's wonderful, and he's introduced me to some wonderful human beings, and he did not disappoint when he introduced me to Ryan, that's for sure.
Thank you, Steve.
What's interesting is there are times that, you know, there are people I've known for most of my life, and I know them well. And then when I meet somebody and only known them for a short amount of time, I almost feel like I know some people better than the people I've known for 30 years. And I kind of put you and Steve in that category. It's just there's something that clicks that makes me feel like I've known you longer than I have. And I thank you for that. I don't know if you're making it easier for me or if that's just the way you are we were meant to reach each other, I believe.
I think it has to do with openness and authenticity. Like, you know, being an open book, mm-hmm. Say, hey, look at me, here I am, here's all of me, take it or leave it. and then just being authentically me and you being authentically you. And that's a deep connection between two people.
Absolutely. And those deep connections, providing we're authentic right from the beginning, can happen in milliseconds. And
exactly.
And I feel it. So, you know, so Lion, I have people on here who have gone through stuff in their lives that some people couldn't even fathom. And my goal is to bring people on who have gone through something in life and made the decision not to give up, and rather made that decision to move forward and become stronger because of their adversity. My goal is to have people who are listening, who believe that only they're going through it. I want them to know that you're never alone. You can always find somebody who've gone through something similar you've gone through and ask for help. Because too many of us, especially men, are suffering in silence. So, and I know you haven't suffered in silence. You're a great spokesperson for speaking your true self. Another thing we talk about is that, you know, people tell us life is linear when we're young. I know I went through it. You know, you think if you do all the right things in life, you're going to end up in this certain place. And inevitably, something is always going to get in the way and make your journey a little more circuitous. And I know that happened to you, because I've read a few things that you've written, which I'm still mesmerized by. If you could, for me again, and for the audience, reach back as far as you need to, and grab hold of that defining moment that really changed you, Lion, whether it was a tap on the shoulder, or whether it was a 2x4 upside the head where something told you, Lion, there's a better way to live, and you may want to follow that path. You got a story for us?
Oh, I've got lots of stories. The question is which one to pick. When we were talking before the show, a memory came to mind, and that seems to be the one that wants to be told.
Okay.
So I grew up in Denver, middle-class family. My dad was a shopkeeper, and I felt lost most of my life. I was kind of looking for, where do I belong? Where do I fit? Who am I? Why am I? I was already interested in consciousness and the brain and psychology, even in elementary and junior high school. And I was reading books on psychic phenomenon and how to make ESP work for you and reincarnation. So I've been an explorer, but most of my life was spent in kind of this disconnected state. I didn't feel connected to my parents or my siblings or the dogs we had or the other people. And I was trying to find my way. So I would say I felt lost and disconnected.
Right.
I managed to get into the adventure program called Outward Bound when I was in college. And we were doing winter mountaineering, which means climbing 14,000 foot peaks in the winter. in Western Colorado.
So
I was this kind of a lost college kid and trying to find my way. And there was this particular moment, even in the small group of 20 young people, I felt kind of lost and disconnected. And there was this moment where we were going to snowshoe up a 14,000 foot peak. and so I was having trouble with my snowshoes, and everybody else was sort of heading off and moving forward. And I kind of clumsily was, starting to hike up the hill and in the snow and the cold. And I suddenly felt like, I give up. It's just too hard.
Okay.
And I started crying. And my shoes were not properly fit. And I was just so uncomfortable. Excuse me. And it reminded me of when my dad took us skiing when I was a little kid, and I was always uncomfortable, always cold. The bindings hurt, my shoes hurt. It's like I was a miserable little kid, and here I was being a miserable young adult.
Again,
And the leader came back to me because I was the way behind everybody else. And he said, what's going on? And I just said, I give up. I can't do this. I'm going to go back to the cabin.
Yep.
And he said, okay. But that means everybody else has to go back too.
Oh.
And it suddenly hit me that I wasn't just me, that I was part of the group, that the group was dependent on me being strong and moving forward.
Yep.
And it was a shock. It was like, oh my God, if I go back, everybody's got to go back. I'm going to have an impact on them.
Absolutely.
And fuck up their trek up the mountain.
Wow.
And it kind of, it was like a rod up my spine. It was like, oh God, I'm responsible for them. Not just my own little ego self. And I sort of stiffened up and I said, okay. And I worked my snowshoes and got them fit and then started hiking. And the counselor went, all right, let's go. And I got up the mountain with everybody else.
Wow.
And that was a moment of recognizing that I'm not alone. I'm not just my little complaining ego self, that I'm part of something bigger. And that really stuck with me, because for the rest of my life, I felt like I belonged to something bigger, to the universe, to nature, to groups I was involved in, to the class I was part of. Like it expanded my sense of self from the little ego to the big ego, to a sense of beyond myself.
So did you ever tell that leader the impact that those few words had on you for the rest of your life? You ever get a chance to do that?
Never did. No, there were so many other things happening, including
at that time,
including groups and psychology and therapy.
Wow.
And it was the beginning of a semester long program where a number of us went on Outward Bound together and then lived together in sort of a commune and got university credit for it. Wow. And so that was pretty cool.
I'll tell you though, that advice he gave, he probably just didn't even think twice, but how impactful it was for you, not just to get up that mountain, but probably every time that you thought about giving up, you had those words and you think that, that there's other people counting on me.
Absolutely.
And that could build some confidence in you. That can build some confidence that people are going to be relying on you.
And also resilience. And also the recognition that it's not just me alone. It's an expanded sense of self, really. Absolutely. It's like, I am more than just little me.
Yeah.
I'm part of something bigger.
Absolutely. Yeah. So after you got up to the mountain, what were your next ventures in life?
Well, I got through college and I was studying consciousness, everything I could, because I found a teacher shortly after that who really opened me up. He was a teacher of natural consciousness expansion. He had his own school in the mountains of Colorado called the Adventure Trails Survival School and Brain Laboratory. He had 250 acres of beautiful mountain property, log cabins, a pump well, no running water, no electricity. And he taught the brain in nature course. So we were sitting around trees and deer and skunks walking through while reading about the brain. And he was one of the first people to say how the brain works is how consciousness works. And let's study the brain to understand our consciousness.
Wonderful.
And so I was really lucky to have him as a great teacher. I ended up assisting him in his school for a couple of years. And he was a brilliant man who had his own consciousness awakening and wanted to teach others. And so he's really been my model of excellence my whole life. I always thought someday I'll be a teacher like him. And now I am one. It took a long time and a circuitous route. But to have a teacher who sees you and sees your potential and opens you up to your potential is really valuable. It's invaluable. It's impossible to put a value on.
Absolutely.
So I was very fortunate to study it with him. And then I went back to school and studied everything I could about psychology and the brain, neurology, philosophy, linguistics. It was just like a sponge because he said to me, everything you study can be applied to yourself. It's relevant to you. Okay. So when you're studying psychology, you're studying your own psychology. Okay. When you're studying physics, you're studying your own physics of your body.
Okay.
So I was just a fiend for knowledge and graduated with one of the first degrees in consciousness studies that I know of in 1975.
Wow. So he mentioned it was conscious awakening. Is that what the term?
Natural consciousness expansion is what he called it.
Natural consciousness expansion. Now that's teachable, or do you have to feel it? I mean, how do you, or do you think it, do you feel it? Cause that, how does that work?
Well, he lived in nature and he had bought that mountain, because he wanted to live in nature.
Okay.
And his philosophy was basically based on biofeedback. And biofeedback we usually think of as, you know, putting electrodes on your brain and then watching your brain waves, getting the feedback, right? He said that in nature, your sensitivity expands and you can actually hear your own brain working. And so we were doing experiments with consciousness that we today call meditation and mindfulness and psychodrama. He was an early pioneer in all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
And so we were learning about our own consciousness by practicing different things, including controlling our own brains.
I love it, man. When was this? What year was
in the early 1970s.
Early 70s. Geez, he was way ahead of his time.
Yeah, I'm
telling you, because it's fascinating how little we really still know about the brain, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was studying the brain back in the 70s, the brain was a lot simpler than it is today because we knew a lot less.
Absolutely.
So it's gotten more and more complicated. The brain is the most complex thing we know of in the universe.
Absolutely.
Trillions and trillions and trillions of connections. And we still have no idea how the brain and consciousness are interconnected.
Right.
We know, and there's a reason for that. One is that the brain is based in scientific language and consciousness is based in experiential language. They're two different languages.
Right.
And so scientists will say, well, the brain produces consciousness, but it doesn't because you can have consciousness without the brain. And vitalists will say, no, consciousness produces the brain. You know, there's this consciousness and it creates brains. we know they're interconnected. We don't know how. Nobody knows how. Nobody can say this is how consciousness and the brain interact. Lots of theories, no certainty.
No certainty.
Because it is very complicated. We're complex beings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So you now have this newfound interest, this wisdom, and you're moving forward with it. After you graduated college, other stuff happened.
Yes.
and I read something. And so if you could just, you don't have to go through the whole story, because it is a fascinating story. But and I'm wondering, when you start telling us what happened, did your experience in your training kind of impact how you reacted in that scary situation?
And the answer is absolutely yes. So let me go back. So I graduate from college with a degree in consciousness studies. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to do next.
Right.
And nobody's hiring people with degrees in consciousness studies, because as far as I know, I was the first
so, <one. Right. laughs>
so I couldn't find a job. There were no yep. jobs with people like me. And so I needed to make money. So I sort of got a job as a traveling salesman.
Okay.
And I was selling jewelry and gift items to stores. And I started traveling in a van that was like an RV mm-hmm. between Colorado and California. And I was traveling for about a year and a half, just trying to figure out what I was going to do next.
Sure.
And I really didn't know.
Right.
I couldn't see my future. I couldn't predict my future. I didn't understand what it was going to be like. But I was kind of having a vacation and making some money on the side.
Why not?
Exploring.
Yeah.
I was pretty dissatisfied. I wasn't happy doing what I was doing, because it wasn't purposeful. It was just to make money.
Yep.
And I was on my way between Las Vegas and L.A. one day, and traveling through the Mojave Desert. And there was a guy whose car had broken down. And one of my philosophies, being a nice guy, was mm-hmm. to stop and help people whose cars had broken down or they needed help. Right. So I stopped in the middle. It was about 110 degrees out. And there was this guy staring into his hood, staring into his engine, as if he knew what he was doing. And clearly he didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped and I said, "Can I be of help?" And he said, "Yeah, I just put $200 into her and she won't start." And I said, "Well, I'm heading into LA. Do you want a ride?" And he looked at me kind of funny and said, "Yeah, okay." And he took his duffel bags and suitcases and he brought them into my van, which was already pretty crowded.
Yeah.
But I figured I'd drop him off at some point. And so we'd start traveling. We smoke a little pot together, get friendly.
Yeah.
He ended up traveling with me for 3 days.
Wow.
And during that 3 days, mm-hmm. I grew to trust him. I'd send him on errands with a van. I gave him clothes to wear because he had raggedy clothes.
Right.
I gave him books to read. I was kind of took him under my wing.
Mm-hmm.
And the third night, we were camped out in the middle of nowhere, east of LA. And suddenly there was an explosion.
Hmm.
I was in the back of the van moving some things around in this crouch position between cabinets. He was in the front of the van listening to music. Explosion, something hits me in the head. I think maybe the gas stove exploded. I look up, the gas stove's intact. Then I look to my left and I see him in the front seat with a gun pointed at my head.
Gun pointed at you. Jeez. Yeah. Okay.
And I was shocked, of course, and my head hurt. And I said, are you shooting at me? It's like it was so out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he said, shut up. And so I thought, okay, he's warning me. He wants to take my stuff. And at that point, it's like, fine, take it all. Leave me naked outside in the desert where we were.
Yeah.
And, that's fine. Like, it was like no attachment to anything in the van. No, my stuff, like, take it.
Yeah.
But then he shot again. And another explosion. The second bullet missed me by a fraction of an inch. But I realized this is not a warning. He's going to kill me.
Yeah. Yep.
And at that point, I had a choice. I was in another choice point. It's like, what do I do? What do you do when you're about to die? I had studied death and dying and Buddhism and lots of topics about that. And so I thought, okay, well, I don't want to die angry or upset.
Okay.
I want to die in peace. So the first thing I want to do is I want to clean up my past. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of did this fast going through my past and I asked forgiveness for anyone I had hurt.
Okay.
And I forgave all those who had hurt me because I wanted to die clean.
Of course. Yeah.
And he shot again. Third time. Again, missed me by a fraction of an inch. I jumped. And so that was cleaned up. And then I started expanding up to God and source and saying, I'm ready to come home. Wasn't expecting to come home quite so soon, but that is. And so I was in this peaceful place. There was this golden light coming down and filling me. And it was like, all right, that's cool. And I'm sort of looking down at the van. I'm outside my body and looking down at this little van with this little scene going on, and thinking that was amusing. You know, that's, oh, look at the little people doing this little dance. And he shot a fourth time. And this time my head was thrown violently to the side and blood was rushing down. And I was back in my body, which was unusual because I thought I was supposed to be out of my body. Because I was predicting death. But now I'm back in my body. Mm-hmm. I'm bleeding and I'm thinking, okay, now what? You know, because I had studied anatomy and physiology and psychology, and I knew myself quite well, dance, mime, I was into all kinds of things. Mm. I knew my body quite well. So I did a scan of my body and I knew about the brain. I thought, well, if the bullet went through my brain, something is missing. Yeah. Something's got to be missing.
I
couldn't find anything missing. Sure. Like I felt intact.
Yeah.
And so at that point I said, all right, well, if I'm going to die, I want to look my assassin in the eyes. Cause I was, you know, perpendicular to him.
Yeah.
And so I picked up my head, I turned and I looked at him and he freaked out. And he said, why aren't you dead, man? You're supposed to be dead. And I didn't have an answer for that question. So I just said, you know, here I am. And he said, that's too weird, man. It's too weird. It was just like my dream. And I went, what dream? And he said, it's this morning I dreamt that I was shooting at this guy and he wouldn't die, but it wasn't you. It was somebody else in the dream.
Jeez.
At this point, I thought, okay, this is weird.
Yeah.
This is really weird.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who's writing this script.
Yeah.
I don't remember signing a contract to be in this movie.
Nope, I'm not. No way, man.
But it's, you know, and I thought, well, if I could talk him down, then he maybe wouldn't shoot me if I could keep him talking.
Right.
And so I began to talk very slowly. And every time I tried to talk, he said, shut up, shut up. And he was bouncing around the van looking outside. There was nobody around anywhere. And so I just, very slowly and calmly, you know, and finally he came over and he looked down at me after a few exchanges and he said, does it hurt? And I realized that he was caring about me,
from
wanting to kill me to caring about me.
Caring about you.
And so, you know, I knew enough about psychology that I sort of very slowly talked him down. And to make a very long story short, we ended up talking for 8 hours.
Unbelievable.
Trying to figure out how to get out of this situation.
Yep.
It turned out he had been in jail. He didn't want to go back to jail. Yeah. I didn't want to die. And so we had to like figure out what was happening. But I asked him about him. I wanted to hear his story.
Wow.
And so he told me his story of growing up in poverty and drunk father beating him and going to the army and going AWOL and all kinds of adventures that he had. And I realized later that, you know, his beliefs and his upbringing led him to his life of crime.
Of course.
Yep. My beliefs and my upbringing led me to being a young entrepreneur and making money and having all this stuff that he wanted, you know.
Right, right.
So there was something in both of our backgrounds that programmed us for our life.
Yeah.
And that led to more in-depth study, more than 100 workshops and trainings, trying to understand what that is.
Yeah.
Who are we? How do we become who we are?
Yeah.
And what can we do to change it if we don't
Absolutely.
Like it?
Yeah. So I know that it turned out that he let you go, you let him go, and you went your separate ways, which in and of itself is amazing. After that experience, where'd you go from there?
Well, first I didn't want to be on the road selling shit anymore.
Yeah, I didn't think you would. That's done.
So, let's Next get career. Me off the road. So I ended up settling in LA because that's where I was.
Right.
And I looked for a job. And the first job I got was as a headhunter.
Oh.
Which was kind of ironic after having my head hunted.
Oh,
I thought.
Yes.
So I kind of fell into that work as a recruiter, and I ended up having a 25-year career in headhunting, including starting my own business and you know, having employees and building a million-dollar search firm.
Yeah.
So, and that was great. And I also got married and had my first child and like all these what are called householder duties, right, that they call it in India. And so I had a life. And I was also exploring consciousness on the weekends and at nights, you know, doing medicine circles and men's groups and consciousness workshops and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So it was a passion of mine to just learn as much about myself and about consciousness and spirituality as I could.
Right.
Absolutely. And so that's, you know, that's where I went as a profession, making money, having a kid and a wife and a life and a community. Yeah. So it was a good life.
And then, and so it's a good life. It came to a point where you were ready to walk away from the recruiting, the headhunting business.
No, the recruiting walked away from me.
It did.
The dot bomb happened.
There we go.
Around 2000. And my business went from $1 million to zero in 2 years.
2 years.
Because there were so many people unemployed.
Of course.
So many companies that fell apart. They didn't need headhunters anymore.
That's right. The
dot. And then I was lost again. It's like, now what do I do? I had no idea what was next.
Right.
Because, the thing I had been doing for 25 years just went away.
Gone. Just like that. Right.
And my girlfriend at the time said, well, you should be a coach. And I said, I don't know anything about coaching. And she said, of course you do. You've been coaching executives for 25 years and people who need jobs. You can be a coach easily. I don't want to coach anymore. I'm going to give you my clients. And I went, okay.
You had mentioned wife and kid, and now you said girlfriend. What happened?
Oh, yes. Well, there was a divorce in the middle
gap
of that.
There. Oh, it's that thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So divorce from your wife and divorce from recruiting, and now it's going into coaching and your girlfriend. Right. So you have her clients.
Right.
Wow. You went through a lot, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a life.
It is a life. You're right. It happens to us. All right. So now coaching. What type of coaching were these clients that?
Well, they wanted to change their lives. And so I would give them great advice and give them practices to do. And then they would come back the next week and I'd say, okay, did you do the practice? Did you take the advice? Well, no, I did. Something else came up and I didn't do it. And that was frustrating because I was giving them the best of what I knew.
Yeah.
And they weren't taking it. And I realized there's something in the way here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that led me to really look at what gets in people's way, what keeps them stuck.
Yes.
And after years of research, I realized it's their beliefs, their limiting beliefs, their negative beliefs.
Right.
And that's where I got passionate about belief change, tried lots of different belief change technologies. Mm-hmm. And like most techniques, they worked kind of partially, not for very long.
Right. Right.
And so I wanted to know what changes people permanently.
Permanently. Wow.
And so that was my passion and my study, and I finally figured out what it was. And the fact is that most belief change methods and psychology methods and sociology methods are outside in approaches. Well, let's talk about it and then, you know, eventually something will happen inside. Or do this and this and then you'll be changed. But it doesn't happen. Change happens when it's multidimensional. When it impacts our physical self, our emotional self, our mental self, our spiritual self,
our
energetic self, our relational self, our cosmic self. Okay. So that's when real shifts happen, when it's a complete transformation, not just a little incremental change.
Sure, sure.
And so I gathered together the processes that create transformational change.
Okay.
And I began sharing them with other people, both as a coach and as a teacher. Okay. And that's what led me to being who I am today, which is a teacher of this methodology called the Clear Beliefs Method of transformational change.
Does the work start from within, though, Lion? It starts from within us, right? We have to work on ourselves.
All the students, while they're learning these techniques to help others, have to work on themselves as well, using the same techniques, so they can actually experience the change for themselves.
Right. Yeah, too often we try to change all these external circumstances, think it's going to change us from within, where it's the other way around, really.
Right.
So tell me the impact of your work now and how you're transforming and really helping people. I love that, the term permanently change their belief system. A lot of people aren't going to believe you on that one. Tell me how something can be permanently changed.
Again, we are multidimensional beings. Okay. And we have all these dimensions to us.
Right.
And beliefs come out of our experiences.
Sure.
Whether somebody tells us who we are or we figure it out ourselves. it's based on our experience. Experience is multidimensional. Right now, you're seeing and smelling and touching and feeling and hearing and thinking and emoting, right? They're all happening at once.
Right.
And so if beliefs are multidimensional, and we are multidimensional beings, if our beliefs come out of experience and experience is multidimensional, we're multidimensional beings, the process to clear that thing, that conclusion, has to be multidimensional. It's got to impact all aspects of who we are.
Absolutely.
And so that's the key to permanent transformation, is when you clear it multidimensionally, it's gone and it doesn't come back. If you just work on the mental system, it's still there in the body and the emotions and the psychological self.
Absolutely.
If you were just, beat on a pillow to clear it, that's good emotionally and physically, but it doesn't clear it from the mental or the historical memories part of us.
Right.
But if you do it all at once, boom, it's gone and it doesn't come back.
Okay. And for the average individual who wants to change, how long does this take? Does it depend on where they're starting off? Or how much they adhere to the process? How does that work?
Well, I could ask any client or you, how fucked up are you?
Depends on how fucked up you are. Well, we may not think we're that messed up.
No, that's true. That's true. Everybody's done some work on themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening to your podcast.
That's true.
So we have tens of thousands of beliefs that have accumulated in our lifetime, starting while we're still in the womb.
Yes. Yes.
Now, babies don't have mental beliefs, but they have experiential conclusions.
Right.
If the mother's feeling afraid, for example, because of a violent husband or war or poverty, the baby's feeling afraid because babies feel whatever the mothers feel. They're experiencing what the mother's experiencing.
Absolutely.
So a baby could conclude in the womb, the world isn't safe.
I want to stay in here. Yeah.
Yeah. at least I'm protected in here. I don't want to go out of there.
Yeah.
Now that's not a verbal conclusion. No. It's an experiential one.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
And so then we come out and we're told who we are and what's right and what's wrong and what's good and what's bad. And all, we get accumulated beliefs and conclusions layered on top of each other over and over and over again.
Right.
So the question is, which ones are interfering with your life? Because some beliefs are good and useful. Yeah.
Right.
Look both ways before you cross the street.
Of course.
That's a good belief for a child, also a good belief for an adult.
True.
You wouldn't want to clear that one because you get hit by a truck, right? But the core beliefs, the core beliefs that are stickiest are ones about the self. I'm no good. There's something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never be able to do it. I can't have it. Or cultural beliefs. We're not the sort of people who can become rich. Or we always fail. Or something bad's going to happen. Yeah, so we look for what the interfering beliefs are in the psyche, and then we apply our process and clear them one by one.
Okay.
Most of us have 3 to 5 clusters of negative beliefs that are impacting our life. And so how long does it take to clear the 3 to 5 clusters? Each cluster might be made of 10 or 20 beliefs. Mm-hmm. It could take 3 to 6 months to really clear them out so that they're no longer interfering. Now, there's still lots of other stuff that'll come up later that you have to clear, but now you have the technology to clear it. You know how to clear it.
Right,
and so when it comes up, you just go, oh, yeah, we'll just apply the process and clear that out of my way.
So my understanding, in my research so far, is like everything in our brain, we can't like delete it. It's always going to be there, but it doesn't necessarily have to impact us moving forward. Is that accurate?
No.
Okay. Help me out here.
So that comes out of people who have not figured out how to clear things completely.
Okay.
They believe that it will always be there, and so you have to adjust around it.
Okay.
Even Carl Jung said, you never get over your neuroses, you just have to adjust around
it. Okay.
But what I've found through my research and 40 years of R&D is that you can clear them completely so that they are not in existence anymore. They are out of your brain.
Interesting.
They're gone. You may remember that you had it because, memory is just one of our systems, but it's not impacting you anymore because it's out of the conscious process or the subconscious process that's processing reality and telling you what's true. So we clear it out of the subconscious mind, the conscious mind, and the superconscious mind, the higher self, all at once. And then it's not in existence anymore. It's as if it didn't happen. Now, you may remember a childhood wound. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was harmed. Yeah. But it's the same as if you cut yourself and the scar happens and the body knows how to heal. The body knows how to heal.
Yes, absolutely.
And so you still have the scar, but it doesn't, you're not bleeding anymore.
Okay.
So it's that kind of thing. When you clear it out, it's gone. It doesn't come back. It doesn't impact you. And you don't have to think about it anymore. And you don't have to keep doing a process over and over like affirmations. Well, just say your affirmations 40 times a day and eventually your subconscious mind will change. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You're just adding negative beliefs to positive beliefs to negative beliefs. Mm. And then they get into a battle and you're just stuck in this. You know, I have a lot of money. No, you don't have a lot of money. I'm going to lose weight. No, you've never lost weight.
Yeah.
And that's the inner dialogue that most people have when they're trying to change. We just clear out the negative stuff first, like clearing the ground to make a garden. And then when you plant the seeds, then they can take because there's no interference.
Right. Now, I love that you clarified that it's not just not just from the consciousness is clear, it's the subconscious too, because the subconscious is what's clobbering us.
That's right.
Because that's where almost, so that's absolutely fascinating, Lion. I love it. I could talk to you all day.
I've got time. We're good.
Well, no, I do have two more questions for you. And I think I'll ask them at the I'll ask them now, and then I'm gonna let the audience know more about you. I want to ask them now because I'm very looking forward to the responses to these two questions, especially the first one. All right, so Lion, you have an opportunity to sit down with 7 to 10 year old Lion, and you want to give him advice about life. What are you gonna tell him?
First, I would sit with him, put my arm around him, and hold him close because little kids need to be held tightly to know that they are securely loved.
Right.
Physical contact. And I'd look him in the eye and I'd say, I know you believe that there's something wrong with you. Based on the evidence, based on what you've experienced, you feel disconnected, you feel sad, you feel lonely. But I can tell you, because I know you, there's nothing wrong with you. You are a divine spark of light. Mm-hmm. Your life is going to be great. You can feel comfortable being yourself. And if other people don't like you, that's their problem.
I love that.
So
love
just that. Enjoy living and be free to be you because you are terrific. And I will be here at your side for the rest of your life, reminding you in your ear that you are a divine child of God. You deserve happy. You deserve love. And you deserve a great life, and you're going to have one.
I love that, Lion. All right. So now we switch hats, and now you're sitting down with young Lion, the young entrepreneur, businessman. You want to give him advice about business. What are you going to tell him?
I've got a lot to tell him.
He gets more advice. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, young entrepreneurial Lion, let me tell you a few things. First of all, you think you're clever. You're not so clever. You think you know better than other people and that you don't need to study other people. That is not true. You're a wonderful being, but you haven't learned about business and you need to study business. You need to study the principles of business, the principles of economics. You should go back and get an MBA. Then you'd be prepared to do what you're about to do. And then while you're at it, get a PhD because you're going to need that too to be and do what you want to be and do. So stop thinking that you're so smart that you don't need to study other people's stuff and get with the program. Will you please? And
I love it.
Stop the nonsense.
I love that. All right. I have another question that I just figured I would have to ask you because I love the first name Lion. Can you please tell me how that came about? Do you know why mom and dad gave you that name?
Yeah, mom and dad didn't give me that name.
They didn't.
They gave me an assumed name.
Oh.
They assumed I would like it when I grew up, and I didn't like it.
Okay.
So when I was studying with this man on the mountain, one of the principles was you take on a medicine name like the Indians did in their transformational experiences and their initiation ceremonies.
Okay.
And so he said, go find out what your medicine name is. Go walk in the woods. And so I took a walk in the woods. I'm thinking Medicine Name. I don't know anything about Medicine Name. I don't know anything about Indians. I'm a you know, middle-class kid from the suburbs of Denver. You know?
I love it.
But I'm, you know, walking around going, oh, what's my medicine name? And I heard Lion. And I went, Lion? I don't know anything about lions. They're in the zoo. What do I know about lions? Yeah. And I certainly didn't feel like a lion. I was a lost puppy.
You know? Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, if that's my name, it's certainly a dormant potential. It's not who I am today.
All right.
And so I called myself Sleeping Lion because I felt like I was half asleep.
Love it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so that was my medicine name on the mountain. And over a period of time, it changed. I became Waking Lion and then Lion on the Prowl. And finally, I was just Lion. And that's who I became. And that became my official, my real name.
I love it. I love it. I had to ask you that story. I don't know why I didn't ask you that soon enough. Okay. That was good. That was perfect. So the audience certainly is going to want to get more of you, Lion. They've grasped the essence of Lion Goodman. So audience, here's how you're going to get in touch with Lion. The first five people who email Lion at lion@clearbeliefs.com. Did I get that right? I got that right. Good. You will receive a $250 discount off of his $500 audio program called Clear Your Beliefs. If you put in the subject line, my name, Drew, and go to clearyourbeliefs.com, you will get that $250 discount. That sounds awesome to me. So I definitely encourage you to get in touch with Lion. Anything else you want the audience to know, my friend, before we depart?
Yes. If there's a part of your life you don't like, let's say you don't like your relationship or you don't like your job or you don't like your financial situation, start by examining your beliefs about that topic. If you don't like your spouse, look into your beliefs about your spouse and about relationships. If you don't like your job, what do you believe about work? What do you believe about employment? What do you believe about yourself? Now, I do have a free ebook, which is also available on clearyourbeliefs.com. And in that ebook is an exercise called Belief Self-Diagnosis, which takes you through an exercise where you can examine your beliefs about many different topics, I think 20 different topics. And so begin examining your beliefs because that's the source of whatever problems you have and also whatever goodness you have in your life. And so by clearing the negative beliefs that are holding you back, you can then create more positive beliefs that'll move you forward. So that's my advice to everybody is start by examining your beliefs. There's a way to bring them up from the subconscious mind in that exercise, and then you'll see what's running your life, and then you can do something about it.
I love that, man, because we all need to write our own stories instead of letting other people write it for us, Lion. Lion, thank you so much. I am so grateful that you're in my life, man. I love you. Keep doing what you're doing, man. You're a great, wonderful human being, and you're doing wonderful things to help people get rid of those negative belief systems because we all deserve happy and fulfilling lives. So you may as well get in touch with Lion, and let's get rid of those negative beliefs we have of ourselves because you all deserve a healthy and fulfilling life. Wouldn't you say so, Lion?
I second that emotion and thank you for having me on your program, Drew. It's been a true pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure too, Lion. All right, everybody, you go take care of yourselves. Be well.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and give us a review to help others find it. If you find yourself immersed in adversity and would like to find support from other men in times of struggle, please become a member of my Men Supporting Men collaboration tribe by emailing me at drew@profitcompassion.com, expressing your interest, and I'll get in touch with you. Speak to you soon.